Welcome back to Movie Trailer Reviews Podcast. Your host Chris here with Ro and Brandon, and we are here to review Dune Part 2. Paul Atreides unites with Shauna and the Freeman while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. The first one came out, what, right in the middle of 2022? Because during the pandemic, I know they didn't, there's a big deal about it not being released in theaters in the middle of a fucking pandemic, but wasn't it 2021?
It was at the end of 2021, I thought.
End of 2021? Okay. I couldn't remember exactly.
Yeah, 2021. I couldn't. 2021.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's only 2 years. What did you guys think?
So, I don't think I talked to you guys about part one, but, it's nice to see the full movie that he made. That should be part one. Dune part two, thankfully, you don't need to have seen the first one to get it, because they drop you right into the action. It's an actual continuation of where the first film leaves off and picks up. Cinematically, I think the first one was actually prettier. And had more depth of field, but I think that's because they had to do more bigger set pieces that weren't just confined to the planet of Arrakis. Story-wise, I thought it was that he kept it really simple. It's pretty straightforward. I am slightly disappointed because some of the things that help people understand and remember that this is a second world fantasy, that this is not something that's derivative of Earth and has nothing to do with the real world's configuration of anything whatsoever. He toned down the magic a little, and that was very disappointing because that is one of the most compelling parts about what Frank Herbert was doing with the Chosen One myth he's playing around with. I do believe that Dennis did something that Frank Herbert has never done, which is be highly aware of where he pulled from all the different parts of culturally and gave them a lot of rich depth for the world and for the society that he wanted to build. But I think pulling away from some of the magic, simplifying the story, makes it easy for people who aren't all the way down the Dune rabbit hole like me, and other people who kind of like fantasy like this, to be able to find this story to be accessible. I thought Zendaya as Shani was amazing and also underutilized. I am slightly annoyed that he keeps making it abundantly clear that he's setting all these things up with these amazing actors, and he's only giving to us piecemeal bit by bit because he has this map in his head and he's holding us hostage to allow him to continue making his movies. And with that being said, that speaks to the underutilization of Florence Pugh and the role of the Empress and the entire thing about that part of the conspiracy and the story that was going on. But what works in this movie works at a high level. Cinematically, it's beautiful. I think he does some very interesting things. And Greg Reiser, for the first time, I have to admit, I think actually listened to whoever was his gaffer, because the lighting was much better across various places. But I think it's abundantly clear that Dennis is a filmmaker who believes that a picture should speak for itself. I think he's wrong, especially when you're dealing with speculative fiction and fantasy. But I think as a sum total, Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2 make a fantastic beginning to one of the best psyops ever run by a secret society ever. I came for the Bene Gesserits and I stayed for Zendaya's Chani. So that was me. But yeah, I have thoughts and feelings, deep ones.
I mean, so I remember watching the first Dune in the comfort of my home. I'm trying to remember. Did we screen this right? I did watch this at home.
Yeah, we were all at home.
I'm pretty sure I watched it at home.
Yeah, we were all at home.
So, I've been very vocal about how fucking boring the first Dune is. It did not do anything for me. I don't care how beautiful your film is. I'm drawing a blank. What was that Sandra Bullock film where she was in space screaming for 90 minutes? I forget what it was called. But like, you can have a film that's beautiful and it still not do anything for me, really. And that was like one of those films. Dune was kind of like that. The story didn't really do much. I am not like Timothy is the kid just don't be moving me, right? So watching him in this big, beautiful film in some very like, I don't want to say like Dances with Wolves type of stuff, but I have fallen and I need the underprivileged to hide me and pick me up. I have fallen from royalty, blah, 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 and this stuff's going on my family. Like, it's a very typical story. And I did not care. And I mean, I had this book purchased on Audible ready to go. And then I watched the film and I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't care anymore.
Oh, don't do that. Oh, that hurts my heart.
You make better first films. So I watched it all, almost all 3 hours of it. Was not impressed. But I saw the previews for this one and I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to give this a second chance because why not? So I went to the theater to see it in 4D in the middle of the day. We had a 1 o'clock screening and I went to see it. It was like four of us in the theater, I think. And I'm going to be honest. This shit was so much better than the first one. Like, it's not boring. It's super interesting. I actually disagree with you on the way it looks. I think they did amazing work with how big the film looks, how massive the film actually is. Like, when they show the sandworms and shit, I was like, yeah, and them riding them, I was completely here for all of this. I was like, all right. Why wasn't this the first fucking film?
I'm not trying to say the movie doesn't look good. My bad, if that was the impression. I wasn't trying to say that.
You said it didn't look as good. You were saying it didn't look as good as the first one. And I understood what you meant, because there's a lot of space shots in the first one that do look amazing. Like, I'll give Dennis this. This is a very simple story that seems super complicated and complex because of the amount of characters and pieces being laid on the board. And the board is ever growing, even though people are being removed from it as it's growing, which they grow it by, you said, introducing these big name actors who show up for a hot second and it's a setup. And you know it's coming. It's like, okay, they're not just going to add this person to this movie and not use them. They're going to be a major player at some point to some degree in some essence, or they have characters that they introduce. Even because this movie's so damn long, they have characters that they introduce later in the game who become you, who you think are about to have like super big, huge moments, and they kind of do. But it's kind of like, it's like fast foody, microwavey. I'm not downplaying how well it looks or how it's done, but it is just like, oh, that actor was in this, and then they use that actor, and their presence is made, and then their presence is gone. And then some actors, I feel like this keeps happening to Florence. It's like the second time I feel like this has happened to Florence. But if they sign her checks and she cool with it, hey, I'm cool with it. It's whatever. She getting her graces. She'll get moments, I guess, and other stuff that are going to be more focused on her and not just kind of have you looking at her and go, oh, look, it's Florence. The music is, I feel like the soundtrack or the scoring of these films is also massive. And it just goes hand in hand with the visual and the cinematography. Like, and I'll give it to Timothée. This is the first time this motherfucker has emoted to me, really. Like, I know we sat and watched him singing Wonka and his goofy little butt was supposed to be. And I was like, look, he can act. And I was like, look, I don't care. I was watching this and I was like, oh, okay. He came, like, I don't know, Zendaya must have put something, must have did something to him, like, pulled him aside, like, bro, you can't sleepwalk through this one, all right? Because me and you got a lot of scenes together, and, you know, I want Tom to be like, okay, y'all won't just kiss him for the hell of it. Y'all was really acting together. because I feel like Timotei might have just been here to be here because he's Timotei, but not in this one. Motherfucker shows up, and ultimately, I think that the basicness of the plot and not delving too deep, maybe into the lore and the stuff that is fully that is fully explored through the books, might be the best thing here, because I can see basic audience folk who have no idea about the series here being very confused at who the hero is supposed to be. And I understand that that is on purpose. I understand that. But I don't think general audiences are going to fully understand that. I think they're just going to be like, oh, I'm so confused at what's going on, which is a good thing because it's going to make them want to watch the third one. So, you know, I actually enjoyed it. I've been telling everybody, go see it in 4D. Like, if you haven't had a good theater experience in a while, or you feel like that, you could have had it with the Marvels. But if you feel like that right now, you can go see this comfortably. I'm telling you, put up the extra bucks. Go see this in 4D. It's just worth it. Like, I feel like this is what Christopher Nolan... Go ahead.
I was going to say, or if they don't have 4D available where you are, there is a 70 millimeter IMAX cut, and man, is it worth it? Just as much.
Yeah,
as
4D. I'd want to see. I'd go see this again to go see that. It's that good to me. Like, it's as far as a theater experience. If Christopher Nolan, if this is what Christopher Nolan meant when he was talking about his films and why he thinks they need to be in theaters, and I don't necessarily disagree with Christopher. But I feel like this film is a more tangible example right now for audiences to align with it, with him in that sentiment. This, and it, but all films are not like this. Like this, they just aren't this masked and, you know, theater ready. Like every film does not deserve a 70 millimeter version. But if you have a film like this, Gravity was the name of that film, by the way, that Sandra Bullock, I scream in space film, that. This film deserves that treatment. I enjoyed it. I was going to rewatch the first one. I told myself I'd go back and watch it again, give it some grace, let it try, give it a second attempt. I have not done that. I might have been lying to myself and lying to that movie, and I'm sorry for that. Not really. But I don't have time to waste on stuff. I'd rather waste another 3 hours on this film again than wasted trying to make Dune part one better for me, because part two actually was. And I don't like incomplete films. So I also agree with you about that, Ro. I really don't like being forced to watch almost three hours of an incomplete ass movie. And that's what Dune part one felt like. And this falls into the very rare occurrence of a, you know, Dark Knight. This part two being much better for the audience and better understood by its director and its producers than the first film might have been. Okay. So that's kind of where I'm at with Dune 2. And I'm probably going to end up starting the book in a little bit. I just finished the book. So I'm probably going to start it now. Like,
okay, I have a question, but I want to know what Chris thinks first.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not as moved as you guys were. I think.
Say what?
I said, I'm not as moved as you guys were on this film. It definitely, I agree with you both. This is definitely way better than the first film, because the first film was boring as shit, and it does feel like Dennis is kind of stretching things out a little bit. But I felt that while this film was much better, I also felt like this film was both long, and it's like 2 hours and 46 minutes, but also rushed at the same time. I feel like there were things that they did that they did not explain, and they just did it. And yes, it has big set pieces. Yes, it'll be enjoyable. But as a story, yes, it's better than the first film, but it's that weird thing of you had 2 hours and 46 minutes and you still rushed through certain parts of it. And I'm not even talking about this from a book point of view, or even, you know, Frank Herbert's. I'm not even talking about any of that. Just from a narrative point of view, there are things, and again, it's what happens when you have something this massive that you need to go through. But I also think that the first film being as drawn out as it was meant that they had to then shove a bunch of things into this film that you didn't get enough time. Like you said, Ro, you were talking about the magic pieces and things like that, which I think would have helped a little bit. I think I understand what you were saying, but I'll be honest. Also, I get that we should not put our contemporary viewpoint on the world onto this film, but I'll be honest. It feels kind of really, really weird when you have a white dude sitting here doing another one of those white savior movies. It just does. I get it. Right? You're supposed to, but because the film is rushed a little bit, you don't. It's really hard to not see that you
right.
didn't. Right? You see what I'm saying? It's like I knew that coming in. I knew that.
I'm trying not to spoil because I do want people to see this movie.
Yeah, I'm trying not to spoil either. But what I'm saying is, I get it. I know how this film ends. I know where they're going. I get it. But I also feel the moments that they should have done that would have lessened that feeling just from an outside looking in. For I can understand why certain people will feel a certain way, but it's also because of the way the narrative choices they end up having to make mm-hmm. because of the choices they made in the first film, right? And yeah. So it doesn't mean that it's not a good film. It doesn't mean that some folks won't find it enjoyable. I get that, but I also have to look at it in the totality of it and going like, you spent 2 hours and 46 minutes and you kind of rushed through.
This is all we got.
Like, right, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and I know there's a third film coming, but it's not even that. It's just like, they had to cram so much in to get to the point where you could get to the third part or beyond that you wasted it. And so again, you did the best you can to do that, but it's like you really squandered it after the first film, and that forced you to have to make certain narrative choices around the narrative around Paul and his mother and things like that. That you and again, they drop some things in there to try. Again, Dennis is trying to not go down the path in the show and to have the voice there. But like you said, I mean, Zendaya is underused. There's a lot of other folks that are underused in this. Like there's a lot of characters underused in this, and you kind of know that. Well, I had to do that because I have to move on to the next piece. And
well, I don't think it's because he had to move on to the next piece. This is the question I had for you guys, and you kind of answered it for me. I feel like what Dennis thought was important about building a cohesive story is incomplete. Like, the Bene Gesserits are running like one of the smoothest psyops ever to happen in any known universe. And I think he truly clicked into, and it makes me feel like he's read some of the books about Dunes that are more focused on the Bene Gesserits than he might have like paid attention to some of the more foundational pieces. Because the one thing that works from the first movie to the second movie is the Bene Gesserits. He's got that down. And I feel like he wanted to give us these big, huge, beautiful set pieces, but I also felt like to a certain extent, like I'm trying not to be biased by him giving an interview where he says that he feels like dialogue is the least important part of a movie.
Can't do that. Come on. But, not in this case. Not in this case.
Right. But I feel Say what?
To him, it could be in this case because I feel like he suffers from the same thing that Snyder suffers from.
Arrogance?
He wants to make things look beautiful. Yes. Yes, absolutely. He wants to make things look big and beautiful and drag it out. And because of that, you get these amazing visuals that they don't require any talking or dialogue, which ultimately leads to things like Chris and you both said, just happening. Things just happen because they didn't explain it and they expect you to just kind of go along with it or fill in the blanks for yourself.
Right. Right. I don't think I need no. I think some of it for me, and I tried to put everything that has to do with what I like about Dune and it being on my problematic fave lists as books to the side and just look at this movie. And I will say this, I deliberately did not watch the first movie again before I went to see the second one, because I felt like the first movie barely gives you a prologue's worth of content. And what it like, the soundscape is perfect. The score is perfect. The cinematography is beautiful. And I don't care what anyone says. Last year's Oscar was not Greg Razor's to have, and they gave it to him anyway. But whatever. I just feel like there were some other movies made by women where the cinematography was doing things
yeah, well.
that you don't, but I think it matters when you're dealing with someone who says that they want to tell their story and they want it to be more visual than they want it to be verbal. If you can't do more than give me a couple of scenes that feel like they jump out and everything else feels like it's two dimensional in the world that you build, I have to question your storytelling ability. And Dennis kept teasing and he kept making it clear, I understand this world. I understand what's going on. And he would put pieces together, but this story works. And I do agree with both of you that because he kept it simple. But it also fails the material and it fails the scale of everything else that's amazingly big about this movie, that he started to strip out some of the otherworldliness of this. Like,
about the movies or about the books?
About the movie. Like, there are so many conspiracies that are going on that he doesn't delve into, that you get to the second movie and that final scene, that final setup that happens there doesn't hit the way that it's supposed to. And I know it doesn't hit the way that it's supposed to because there's a previous Dune movie that for all its insaneness has the appropriate scale of space opera in the storyline that it does hit.
You know what it is?
By the time... Yes?
The first film, I think, in some cases, we say it's boring and felt too much on the dialogue and stuff like that. This film then overcorrects and does more on the big scale action. I'm like, do balance.
Yeah.
Balance. Here's the thing. You can't have a Dune film that hits for me that has no bars. There's no bars in this film.
Right.
There's no bars. I'm sorry. It's just like, but like, and I don't need all the bars, but like, what do you mean? Like, people quote Dune all the time. You're not quoting Dune Part 2. You're talking about you're going to talk about the visuals. You're going to talk about the big scale. You're going to talk about that's great, but there's no bars in it. And I'm like,
there's no tiny child screaming. How can this be? He is the Kwisatz Haderach.
There's nothing in there. And I'm like, and again, it's going to work fine. It's going to work fine for a lot of folks and things like that. But that's what does it for me. And I'm like, you put no bars on it because you overcorrected. You rush through certain things. Like you said, there's enough in here to focus on the various aspects. Like this film should have both. This film should be a good mix of both. And what I've gotten so far in these two parts is one that focuses more on the slowdown and the comparison and stuff like that, but not enough on the scale. And then this one that gets a scale. Maybe on the third one, he'll put together the full picture for me and it'll all come together. But like, that's just where I'm at with it.
I don't see that happen. Right, bro.
I don't either. But I'm just saying, I'm just saying that there's only the third film. But to me, each of them gives me half. Each of them, and they're not bad films.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to say it's trash. Don't go see it. Each of them gives me half of what I'm expecting. It's just that. It's like this one is definitely, I will say, it's a faster pace, and there's just so much going on. And again, it's enough to at least, here's the thing, this one's entertaining, the first one's not, right? And that's what I get from
you. This one is 100% immersive across the board.
Exactly.
Like, it's everybody, just, yeah. You get immersed in, like, the visuals are visually. I think the reason why I said that the first one hit for me visually better than the second one is because he started to repeat himself a little around the visuals he was setting up for Timothy. And and now that we're having this conversation, it's abundantly clear that he started doing that because he was not giving us the dialogue, because he wasn't giving us some of the disembodied narrative moments that we need. I thought how he built back in some of the overarching data dumps that we needed to have through Florence Pugh's character was smart. But ironically enough, I think this is going to be the first time I say it, they didn't do it enough and they didn't do it soon enough. And that stuff should have started in the first movie and it didn't.
But also be honest,
I've always felt like Dune was too big to be movies because of the things that you need to do. But now, I don't think it's too big to be movies. It just has to be someone who has respect for the two parts of the whole that make this make sense. And the filmmakers lately, I love Christopher Nolan, and when he decides that he wants to commit to a direction, he's down for whatever. And that might be why I'm an apologist, and I'll fight you over a Christopher Nolan movie, whereas I may not fight you over, say, Ridley Scott. Later.
I hope not. Later. I hope you wouldn't fight me, really.
Right. Like no, I mean, everybody knows where I stand. Look, I've already openly, publicly declared that it's on site, really. He got to fight me. But what I mean about that is there's this trend to try to, quote, ground and to add gravitas and to be more realist than magical when you're dealing with fantasy movies lately. And it's everybody is trying to run from what they think is going to be the, quote, superhero stigma. And I'm like, but you're making a second world fantasy. And a part of what everything that makes this work is the stuff that you're neglecting. And Dennis did a great deal about setting up Arrakis as the planet, giving us an understanding of who the Fremen are. None of that is supposed to have any hearkening call to the real world. And he does a good job of giving us a sensibility of a real community with influences, and that it's very impactful, and it hits different, and it kicks. And I know people like to make the low hanging, oh yeah, we're all in space, but his name is Paul. I'm like, do you know how old that name is? Shut up. If that's all you got, then you don't know what you're talking about. But there are two different things that are happening here. There's the critique about how Hollywood is handling movies that open the door for the opportunity for there to be true diversity and representation in the casting. And then there's the other idea about this is second world fantasy. This doesn't have to bear resemblance to the real world. And in that sense, this cast is extremely diverse. It's diverse visually, ethnically, and it's got some philosophical things where he's fighting with these ideas and he's really playing around with the main things that a lot of people miss in what Frank Herbert was doing. And I think it's hilarious that Brian Herbert, his son, is like, this is the first time I feel like my daddy wouldn't want to fight somebody about them making his books into a movie. So he gets all of those lower foundational grounded elements. He gets them smooth right. But you don't go into Dune and you don't live through Dune knowing the actual prophecy that's built up around Paul Atreides through you. So it undermines some of what you learn and some of the things that you see and some of the machinations that are happening. And that's bad. And every single time that he starts to dig in to give you something interesting, and we have all agreed he had the time, he changes the subject and takes the movie somewhere else.
Correct.
There's no reason for it. And he's been doing that since the first movie. And that is why it works as a simple, cohesive narrative, but it's why the story doesn't sing the way everything else about this movie does.
I say that
having enjoyed the hell out of this movie.
Right. You have to commit. You have to commit to the weirdness and the over the topness. So that's number one. I'll also say too, I mean, again, Timothée, he's a fine actor. I'm not a fan of him as this role. I think that might be it too.
I was about to say, is he? I was like, in my head.
No, he is. I'm not going to sit there and try to say he's not. He has acted. I just, this role, I am not a fan of him being Paul Atreides. It doesn't command enough.
Does he read too young for you, or just not commanding enough for you?
Not commanding enough.
Commanding.
That's the thing. Like, it's like if you're gonna give me somebody who's gonna be the chosen one, then make him a fucking chosen. Hey, it's not even about. Okay, fine. You're gonna give me somebody that's white and blue eyed. If you're gonna give me somebody who's white and blue eyed, fine. I get it. I understand the whole thing. Fucking make it somebody who's gonna be like, all right, cool. Like, make it somebody like. I get it. I'm gonna follow that dude. Not, hey, did you eat today? Did you eat a pork?
Look,
hey, get him some pork chops.
Doing all the heavy lifting for him, bro.
Right. I'm just saying. It's like, that's my thing. I don't believe him. I don't believe him as Paul Atreides, and that's the problem. Okay. It's like, that's also part of the problem. So
because
he doesn't believe
in himself.
Well, that's true though. Yeah.
Bro, I get what you were saying about it. Just kind of felt like they kept reusing his imagery over and over again, or he kept repeating the same thing. Like, his character doesn't actually grow in this film, really, until all of a sudden he starts yelling out lines at people. And I was like, oh, it's like somebody looked at him. It looks like he looked at the director and he went, what's my motivation again? And the director went, excuse me, Timothée, the question is not, what is your motivation? The question is, what are my lines again? Because his motivation isn't there. It doesn't matter. They don't explain it. They don't have his character explain it. He literally is just like constantly telling Zendaya in between kissing, girl, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just doing. And he just keep doing it. She like, but you got to be doing something. You can't just lead us to doing. And he like, yeah, but I'm not. Listen, I'm having nightmares. I'm just telling you right now. I'm just trying not to do what's in my nightmares. And then all of a sudden, I'm doing what's in my nightmares. And I'm like, bro, hold on, man.
That's the part where I was saying y'all had a whole sequence. Y'all had a whole sequence and y'all didn't do nothing. Like, this is where the first movie actually gives you those elements and steps of development. They bring people back in earlier than we get to see them in this movie. They have their alignments and their allegiance. And like Javier Bardem is doing some things in this movie, and I think it's going to make people uncomfortable. They're probably going to say that they don't necessarily like what he's doing, but he's playing a fanatic. He's playing a zealot. He's playing a true believer, and he's doing it so well it actually becomes comical. And it's like the way that they build up the factions that happen within this. Everything that he does around Paul. And I think all of those notes hit, and it makes it, you know, why I can see for you both, because y'all grown, that he fails to be compelling. He fails to have the appropriate charisma. A part of it is he is supposed to be, you know, broken. And this is the part where I've actually seen other people saying, I'm really confused. I don't understand. And part of it, I would agree, is what Chris says, as you start to get to the end of the second act. And he starts sprinting, and then he starts flat out running.
Right. So it's the whole thing. No, I'm not. I don't want. Fuck it. I'm gonna do it now. And it's like, wait a minute. What switch? Like, hold on. Like, then you realize it's like, oh, because of the time, and we gotta get to the next part, and that's why you're doing it. And I'm like, hey, buddy, you had 2 hours and 46 minutes to actually set us up to this point, and you didn't do it. And that is my thing. Again, this is more me, again, not a bad film. Don't want anybody to go, oh, I loved it. Don't argue with me, because I'm at the point where I don't argue with people about films no more. So don't even try that shit. You can sit there and disagree with me all you want. I'm just saying, like,
look, his for best 2 hours is still Arrival, and I don't care.
Well, here's the thing. For 2 hours and 46 minutes, man, don't make me sit there for 2 hours and 46 minutes and you can't. And you have to rush through it. Like, you know, Rain, you mentioned Dark Knight in the terms of this as being better than the first film. Absolutely. But I'll tell you one thing about Batman Begins. Does a great job of doing a setup for the next film. And then Dark Knight takes it from there and carries on and just becomes better. This film here is better.
So I was going to add to that. I wanted to get to you giving us your opinion because I had went long-windedly. Yeah. But I was going to say... But Batman Begins is so much better than Doom.
Exactly.
Like, I watched both of them, and
not only that, it does a great job of Batman. Exactly. It does a better job of reintroducing Batman, setting it up for the next film, and it takes this time. It's a slow build-up. It's like, hey, we knew that. I tell people all the time, Batman Begins starts off because, guys, remember, we were never going to get another Batman film because of Joel Schumacher and what they did with Batman. So it was a fight to get Batman Begins back, right? And a lot of people were like, nah, I ain't going to see that shit. And then you come down, you're like, wait a minute. Okay, we did a good job. And then the Dark Knight takes it over there. And I don't care what nobody says. I still love Dark Knight Rises. So I'm just saying, it's like there's a progression in these films. There's a progression in these films that makes sense. With Dune Part 2,
Narrative progression. Right.
Dune Part 2 has to do so much heavy lifting because of so much that's not done in Dune Part 1. That it makes it so that you can't fully explain everything there. Because there's a lot. I mean, there's so much in this film that itself could have been its own film that you don't get. Old boy who came in, one of the old boy who came in. Who played the old boy at the end who was the guy that came in and replaced Batista?
Do you mean Fade? That's Austin Butler, honey.
Austin Butler.
Listen, guys, I'm
busy. Elvis?
I don't. Oh, you act like I saw Elvis. Hold on. You act like I saw Elvis. The film. Let me finish what I was saying.
For me, if he pranked Stellan Skarsgård's kids.
But that's what I'm going to say. I knew it wasn't the Skarsgård, but I was like, he's giving me Skarsgård. But like, even his character, in a way,
Well, Stellan gave him praise, didn't he?
Huh? So what?
Stellan said he saw the performance and was laughing. I read an interview that he said that somebody said that.
Well, but here's my thing. It's like, but hold on, guys. You guys are missing
what I'm saying. That's because they said he showed up the first day sounding like Stellan and hadn't told anybody.
Well, yeah, and so here's the thing. The thing that gets me about them is the underuses character, though, right? It's like you get this is my problem with the second film. It's like you get so much in here, and then they start rushing through. Like, I'll be honest. You know what? Another thing to do, another person that I'm tired of being underused in films, I swear to God, if y'all keep misusing Batista and not using this big, bulky motherfucker who can act his ass off, if y'all keep doing that, I am going to tell you he should quit acting. Just because I am tired.
This was the first movie where the director even really said, no, you have talent here, lean into it.
Well, so give him more to do. Like, the thing that's killing me is this big motherfucker can act. He might, quite frankly, I keep telling people wrestlers can act because that's what they do, but I keep trying to tell y'all, Batista might be the top out of everyone that's ever come through right now because, like, he can act, and I'm like, I'm tired of coming in and not using his full potential. It's like, there was so much they could have done, but even his parts in this film felt like later on kind of rushed through just so we can get to Austin Butler. I'm like, it's just like, guys, here's the thing. Folks are going to sit through a Dune film. Ain't nobody going to go, 2 hours and 46 minutes. You could have made this film 3 hours. People would have still sat through it. That's just what it fucking is, right? So if you're going to, that's the one thing I will say about Christopher Nolan. Christopher Nolan, he's going to tell you, my films are what they are. You're going to sit through them and you're going to fucking like it. I'm not going to rush through my films. I am not going to do this. I am going to tell you all the pieces of it and you will fucking enjoy it. I feel like everyone else.
Say okay.
And you just say okay. I feel like everyone else goes, I got
to
start.
And you'll complain about how you didn't enjoy it, but you're still talking about his fucking movie and you still went to see it.
And you're still going to see it. And you're going to see it again. And you're going to go see it again and again and again.
Yep.
I feel like what Dennis should have done is you get what you get and just tell the fucking story and go for it from there. I feel like what's happening is there's a thing that he starts committing and then it's like, but it's too long, so let me start rushing through the part. It's like, no, motherfucker, just tell the story. People is doomed. No, are going to go see it.
I think it's the Kill Bill problem.
Yeah.
I think because, Kill Bill should have been one movie. It should have just, like, if they felt like there needed to be a break.
Absolutely.
Kill Bill should have just been one movie, because the second does not sustain or hold up to the first. But if you had just given us one whole fucking movie and he'd cut it in the order that he truly intended, it would have been money and we all would have sat through it and it would have been great. I think for Dennis has a map in his mind and he has an idea of where it wants to be. I think the movie, how it ends this time, is far better than how the first one ends. And I think it's because that was his actual ending for his first part, for the end of where he thought the movie should end.
Yes.
And I think that there is far more footage to far more scenes that were shot than we've ever seen. Because there's no way that in the first movie he didn't explore what was going on between Timotei and Oscar Isaac's character, because there was too much grounded in those scenes that popped up as a flashback on their original planet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
My thing is,
there's no way.
Can we talk about how you knew your first film didn't hit the way it should have hit by how you start your second film? Well, like, if it had hit like people may have been acting or like it should have hit, you don't have to go through that full last time on Dune that he started off with this first film.
Yes, you do.
You don't have to if it's been hit. You really don't. If your first one hit like that, you really don't. But he did.
But I think the reason you do for what... I think that's a storytelling thing for him. I think that's how he thought... I think that's how he thought he would get away with not having the piece of the narrator, which is supposed to be Florence Pugh's. It's like, she's supposed to... Like, I think that's how he thought he would get away with that. And it just reads like how you're reading it. But yeah, I think it was deliberate.
I just also feel like his first film ended like, you've seen this long-ass trailer. Now go see Dune Part 2 when it hits theaters. Because that's what the first one hit feels like. It's all set up, but it's like a not fully fleshed film setup. So it's like, this isn't a fit. What is this?
I'll be what honest.
He really, truly, honestly is one of those people who doesn't find, I think, I guarantee, look, I have never been more convinced that there is a filmmaker who wants to make a silent film more than now. He wants to make a silent film. He truly believes that he can convey everything that needs to be conveyed and that he doesn't need speaking.
Not
that
Lagoon.
He can spend, and that he thinks he's one of those, a picture is worth a thousand words people, and he's right and he's wrong. Now,
in this case, I think that it works in some cases. You can't do that with Dune. The other thing, too, I will say, I have no problem with this being three or four parts, because I think with Dune, it needs to be. And I think the movies need to be fucking long. I'm just saying, hey, buddy, you should have done a better job on the first one so that you could have really expanded out. So the first one should have been your Batman Begins, and the second one should have been your Dark Knight. Like that, I fully believe that's what it should have been. In this case,
the first movie should be Dune, for fuck. Just make Dune. Make it all. Go all the way through. Commit. Just jump down the fucking rabbit hole. This fool is over here talking about, I want to do Dune Messiah. I want to do Dune Messiah. And I'm over here going, are you going to finish Dune first? Before you start talking about homie's kids,
and I think,
you want to finish Dune?
There's a lot of that going on, though, where people don't make
people
the complete
film. These long theater experiences, right? People are like, oh, I want to get back in the theater seats. I want to do, you want to bring people back? Dune is the way they're making Dune right now. Like, just visually and sound-wise, is kind of the way that you can do that. But I also do agree, like, if I'm going to go sit in a theater for a three-hour film, that I also agree should be 3 hours long based on the material, just my basic understanding of the material, right? I expected these movies to be long. When I hear space opera, I expect a long journey. That's what I expect. So when you try to shorten it, or you try to fast-forward through it, or you try to sprint through certain parts, or you just flat out don't explain things because you may have used way too much slow motion and contrasting, like, photo cinematography on screen. Like, I understand what you're trying to do, but I feel like you're really working against yourself when you have elements lacking in one area. When you, like you said, y'all, when you just don't have the balance, when you're lacking in one effect and you're going overboard in the other effect, because that's where you really like to play your hand the hardest. You're just not respecting your own work at that
range. He narratively doesn't have the range. And it pains me.
But he got the time to find it.
It pains.
Maybe. Who did 9 hours on the third film?
I truly believe that the problem is he tried so hard to make a realistic movie in ways that ignore the magic. Like, he wants to lean into the political machinations and the political intrigue and the differences and things that are going on behind the houses, that because he tried so damn hard to ignore the prophetic and the mystical parts of this, he doesn't have the narrative range. Like, you can tell he did. I will never take anything away from him.
He uses them as a crutch. Like, he doesn't. He wants to ground it, like you're saying, but he also doesn't explain things that he needs to explain because he uses the magic points to not have to explain it. He shows the magic happening and then jumps to something else and does not explain why that was important or how we even got there or the significance.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, he feels like he doesn't have to. He feels like the imagery carries it enough. And on one part, it does. But if you want people to not only stay invested and be immersed in your movie, but to be committed to following you into a saga, you got to give everybody all the things. And I think that he doesn't think that he has to. And when you're playing around in a world where it is the white savior trope of all white savior tropes, and I will say that I feel that the way that he plays around with having Paul Atreides be conflicted, the way that he builds the relationship between him and Chani, I think all that works. The way that he lets the world that Paul and his mother get dropped into do a lot of the heavy lifting to play the pieces and the parts, all of that works. But it falls apart when there is at no point in time the audience who's watching this movie has never heard the full prophecy. like they don't know the whole prophecy. And he likes to have this be like these needle drop moments where you learn about a thing for, you know, what you thought was a throwaway line, then comes back later to have these huge important implications. And you can't do that, but also never having given us a real concrete impersonal conversation between Paul and Chani that lets that needle, lets that point actually hit, that lets you know why there's heartbreak or why there's joy or why there's conflict. And in this area, I feel like Timothée did show up to work and he did act and he played well with all his scene partners. Hell, he even got to the point to where he could, you know, handedly engage in hand-to-hand combat and be relatively convincing. But the piece that Chris was talking about, where he suddenly is standing up here and talking and speaking in a commanding way, he didn't earn that. And the reason he didn't earn it is these other things we're talking about. And it's like, I would have been here. I don't have a problem with long movies, but I don't even have a problem with slow burn. I have less of a problem with things that move slowly in order to put pieces where they do than the two of you. Like where my brain says I'm bored, there's a different threshold for me. And possibly it's because I'm watching too much fucking noir, but whatever. So,
ma'am, I watched Love is Blind, where people sit and talk together in pods for the first 7 episodes. I watched Married at First Sight.
And I can't do it. I watched Married at First Sight.
Do weddings. Listen, they do weddings now for the first 9 episodes.
I understand.
I have a very long, large threshold.
I didn't say you didn't have a long threshold. I said where the bar hits for where your brain ticks is different than mine. It's different for Chris's. None of our bar is in the same place. But it's why we can look at these and all agree, nah, that didn't hit.
Well, yeah.
And I checked out.
And I'll also say that, again, I think where I'm at with it is...
You deliberately watch bad movies, though.
Well, yeah, I do. I deliberately watch bad movies on Tubi. What are you talking about? And not the black ones. I'm just talking about, like, the really... Like, see, else like, the black ones are bad. No. You gotta see the found footage bad ones. Those are the bad ones. Anyway, I think for me, it's committing. One, I just looked it up. It's like, Dennis needs to offload the writing to somebody else. I think he's a hell of a director. I think having somebody else write this probably would have been better. He has one other writer on there, but like I think somebody else stronger would have helped a little bit more. And again, this is me almost, you know, there's that. Also, I'm going to just say, man, commit. I'm sorry. And the reason why I'm saying commit is I've seen people who have gone and given us a 3.5-hour movie that didn't earn it, right? For material that doesn't warrant a 3.5-hour movie. If you're going to do, if you tell me you're doing Dune, I'm like, strap up. Like, I'm not, you're never going to hear me go, oh, it's too long. You're never going to hear me say that about Dune. You're doing Dune? I'm expecting I saw it was under 3 hours. And I was like, the fuck? How are you making a Dune film under 3 hours? So I'm like, if you're going to do it, motherfucker, commit. Go in. Like, when they did Endgame and they were like, it was going to be a 3-hour movie. Why? It needed to be a 3-hour fucking movie. Commit.
It needed to be
like,
3 hours.
If it need, like, this is one of those things of, it's as long as it needs to be, right? So don't come and try to tell me you got to cut something. Don't come and tell me, oh, we had to do... No, it's Dune. People get it. Make it as long as it needs to make. Do what you... This is... We mentioned this about... I mentioned the name of Zack Snyder. It's the opposite. Zack Snyder doesn't know when to cut, right? Zack Snyder doesn't understand when to edit. Dennis has the opposite. Stop editing, motherfucker. Put it in there. Like, you need to put it all in there. If you think it doesn't need to be in there, it needs to be in there. He's got he's the anti-Zack Snyder, in which these films need to be that long. They do. Like, it's Dune. It's fine. It comes with the baggage. Ain't nobody come into a Duneville goes, ooh, it's 2 hours and 46 minutes? Ooh, I don't know about that. Everybody fucking knows. So commit.
We all were like, that's it?
Right. I'm like, and that's my
you
problem
got so
with
much
it.
Left
it's
to
like,
do.
There's so much that they...
I brought popcorn and a drink. Right. I spent $20.
Right. I mean,
I knew this film was going to keep that energy up. I need to keep my blood pressure and everything up.
There's just...
And I did the opposite because I knew I was not leaving that theater for nothing.
Exactly. So it's just, that's my thing. And we'll see what happens in the third and beyond and things like that. But my thing is just, like, it's better. But at the same time, it caught me when I got to the... When I was on here with you guys, and I was like, oh my God, it's a Dune film with no bars. Like that, that is, are you fucking serious? Like, you can say all you want about the TV movie that came out, and that had bars. It had bars. People still quote it, right?
The movie had bars. The TV show had bars.
Everything had bars. This don't have bars. And I'm like, come on, man.
Listen, the only bars that are coming from this movie are all Fade's line, and I don't want anybody quoting those because that motherfucker's a sociopathic killer.
Exactly.
I don't want nobody picking up the lines from the serial killer and that be what you take away from this movie.
And that's my point. It's like, that's the problem I have. It's a beautiful film. It's entertaining. I'll say it feels like it lacks a soul.
It does, because I have to say this. I've been bitching offline that I've been starting to watch things, and then I'll get halfway in, and I'm like, you know what? No one here cares what they're doing. Why am I still watching this? They don't care. And the difference between that is what y'all were saying. This movie is designed.
Oh, you watched Mea Culpa too, didn't you?
No, I did not. I do not hate watch. I do not watch Tyler Perry projects. I do not give him money. People will continue to let him make products people continue neither to watch that shit. People.
You know, but honestly, neither do black people who watch Tyler Perry. They actually don't hate watch, which is the
problem.
One of the biggest mysteries in the universe. Right.
Right. But that speaks to what I was going here. I feel like on a certain way, on a certain level, the creative arts are being subtly undermined in ways that filmmakers feel like they need to try to adjust instead of doing what they do and trusting that their audience is willing to come in it with them. I don't know why Dennis has this insecurity that we are not just down for the cause for whatever it is he wants to do, and at home he can just like, let's ride, we're good, let's go. But I feel like he trusts his audience to want longer movies. He has faith in his audience to be willing to give him there to build this amazing, fantastic, epic scaled visual. He does not trust our commitment or our investment in the story. So he's like, well, they're not going to care. We don't need it.
Motherfucker, this people is good sat enough. There. We can keep going. People sat there and watched as you did that motherfucking Blade 2079, whatever that fuck ass shit
49?
Was. Whatever that fuck ass shit was, and sat there and said it was. The minute people said that bullshit ass movie was the greatest thing they've ever witnessed, it was so great and things like that, that should have ended your fucking imposter syndrome right now. Motherfucker, you need to sit down and talk to Christopher Nolan and tell you to make the fucking movie you need to fucking make and get this. I'm sorry. I hear you.
What movie did he say?
That Blade Runner bullshit. He did Blade Runner 2049. Well,
okay, so Blade Runner has a different audience.
You're misinterpreting me. I'm saying if people went to that film, loved it to death, and all this other shit, why are you still having imposter syndrome? Why do you still not trust your audience
because
they were longer
Chris,
films?
I think I actually understand to a degree. Like, okay, so if you're Dennis and you're in this era of we hate comic book movies right now, we're tired of like silly, quote unquote, silly stuff. And you have all these big name directors that are making these negative comments about these things that are not supposed to be taken as grounded. They're supposed to be taken from the source material, which is out there. It is open. It is use your fucking imagination. And these directors are like, what's that? I can understand why Dennis might be like, okay, to get the type of support I need from the studio, to get the type of critics I'm like critique I want from critics, I can't go too far. Even if the book goes that far, I can't go that far. So he might not be going that far. And
I think it's for him,
shot
that's not
certain things or whatever, he might have just took it out. Because
maybe.
He feels like the judgment that's going to come from it is going to be fucking negative. It is. We are in an... If I asked you to name like five amazing big-name sci-fi directors right now, or sci-fi film, that go that far, I'm kind of hard-pressed because it feels like a lot of it is very grounded. And we don't have, like, a lot of space operas. We don't have things that just go that limit that don't kind of end up looking silly, right? Because they might not have been handled well. And then if you look at what's going on with Marvel and the way that's being critiqued into the fucking ground now, like, those are actually done really well. And people are still going, it's so silly. It's like, okay, you motherfuckers don't have no imagination. So now you gotta play with this group of
I don't think his problem is that he's worried about being taken seriously. I think his problem is those are the compelling parts of the story for him. Like, I liked Blade Runner 2049. I didn't think it was the greatest or the best thing that I've ever seen in my entire life, and I'm going to tell that lie. If I'm hard pressed, you ask me what I think Dennis's best movie is, I'm still going to say Arrival. You ask me what his second best movie is, I'm still going to say Sicario. You ask me what his third best movie is, for me, it's still going to be Prisoners. This is his fourth best movie for me. And part of it is because I feel like he is stripping away the things he no longer really has an interest in as he gets further in his career. And Sicario,
if those are films he did, then he can do narrative.
And that's why I'm telling you, those
absolutely do narrative.
But that's why I'm telling you, I think this is a deliberate choice of his. He is stripping away the things that he has the least amount of interest in as he continues in his filmography. And the bad thing about that is all
narrative.
Right. But the bad thing about that is when you ask people to name his movies, they don't go into his earlier career. They don't go into his earlier bag. And you can tell the things he's lifted out of that bag that he now does in Dune and he uses well and that he feels comfortable in doing. But I truly feel like those serious elements, those grounded parts, the parts that he resonates with, he does not feel that there's anything wrong with stripping them from their context and building a narrative with them. And I think on the one level, if you're going to play around with the savior trope, white or otherwise, if you're going to play around with the chosen one prophecy, if you're going to play around with the interloper and indigenous people, he got all those notes right. He got them very right. But if you actually want to make what you're doing sing, if you actually want to remember what's going on, no one is going to watch Dune 1 and Dune 2 and understand the importance of spice. No one is going to understand.
Because they didn't even mention it. They didn't really mention the second film. Like, I'm sitting there going, like, are we really? We're not going to do spices. We're just going to kind of mention it. We're not.
Right.
But then the thing about it is, in the first film, it was all about spice. So I'm like, you overcorrected between films.
In the first film, it was still only all about spice as it applied to Duke Leto taking over the planet because it was commercially important. They still don't understand anything about Arrakis, that any of that stuff. It's like, you know, and I feel on one level he was partially trying to avoid having to play too many beats that left him no choice but to lean into the lore in ways that he didn't want to. And I know that's weird to say, but I don't always find if you want to translate a book to a movie that overcompensating in your script with the lore is necessary. I mean, we've all talked about how Eternals kind of probably could have done with a more cohesive through line for being a lore movie. But again, I still love it and I don't care. But with respect to this, I think the cohesive through line that he gave works, but because he never connected any of those trappings, you don't get it. And that's why I was like, he should have made Sisters of Dune, because what he really wants to do is make the movie about the PSYOP run by the Bene Gesserit. And that's why that's the most well-developed, and those characters are most well-defined, and you get those really pointed moments with, like, Rebecca and who's the older woman? I love her, and her name never stays in my mind, and it makes me feel terrible. But Charlotte Rampling as Reverend Mother.
Here's my thing. My thing is, why not do it? It goes back to what you guys were saying, the whole thing of, now we don't want to have connected universes. Everybody talks about they don't want that. It's like, we should have just made a Dune universe stuff, and then you lead to your big end game with the different. Like, you could have done that. You could have absolutely done that. People would have eaten it up. It would have made a ton of. It's still going to make money, but it's like, people would have eaten that shit up because now you have it all connected. And I wish actually more people took the MCU type of dealing with. I mean, well, shit, Star Wars is doing it too, where you take more of that stuff and just like, it's all part of the same world. Tell the story, man. It's like, these books and things like that, like, you're either going to turn it into an HBO type type epic where you have multiple seasons and there's risk in that, or just make a bunch of the fucking films, man.
Adapt the material to film. But like, I would have been dead. I think they would have because Dennis. Them. If Dennis had told him that he wanted to do a Doom saga.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I'm just saying. If Dennis had said, I want to do a Doom saga.
Marvel Studios is the only one that has committed to it. Marvel Studios, because of who, is the only studio, but I don't think that would have been necessary. And allowing the creators over there to give the middle finger to everyone else to be like, we're going to do it the way we're going to do it, and y'all are going to love it. We're telling you right now.
I don't think he would have had the problem. I really, truly don't think he would have had the problem. People have wanted to do Dune. People have wanted I'm talking about studios. They have wanted Dune back on
studio.
Who, this one?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
It's WB.
Because I don't. It's okay. Warner would have let him do
right?
it. Warner would have absolutely let him do it because they are gagging for their film version of Game of Thrones. And if Dennis had told him that he wants to do Dune Saga, and if he come in and said, let's do House Atreides first, let's start with Jessica, let's do the backstory, let's pull this out. We've got Rebecca Ferguson and Oscar Isaac. Really? You don't think, really? They gave him the money? We got Timothée as a child?
I don't know if they would have. I believe
they'd have given it to him. I'd have let him. I'm just looking at
how they've been handling their other stuff. I don't know if they would have.
Well, no. But that's why I said they would have, Brandon, because of the way they did their other stuff. They gave the keys of the kingdom to Zack Snyder. Now, if it failed, they wouldn't have stayed with it, but they absolutely would have gone out and been like, okay. Because they don't know how to say no at first. They don't know how to say no.
But if Dennis had showed up saying, I want to build Dune Saga,
they would have given it to him.
They'd have told Zach to go sit the fuck down somewhere.
Yeah.
And gave Dennis that money.
Yeah.
Because all that fool boy who has bought this has all he ever says is he was like, we're gonna ride it till the wheels fall off with Harry Potter. I don't care how problematic she is. I don't care how much trash she is. We're going to keep making her shit until there's not a dollar left in there, and he keeps going down the rabbit hole no matter how much people try to force him to divest. He swears up and down at every single meeting where they have a call for the quarter call. He talks about, he's like, our Game of Thrones, and we've got to keep finding our version of Game of Thrones. If Dennis had walked in there and said, I want to build Dune Saga, I want to do it with Warner Brothers, we start with the first one, and here's what my plan is, and it'll be our big budget tent poles, the same way we've taken over HBO with Game of Thrones, we'll just take over the theaters like this, and no one will be able to touch us, Planet of the Apes won't be able to touch us, even though they're coming back, they'd have threw money at that man.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what David Zavala wants, and that's how he knows how to sell.
Dune is space Game of Thrones. Like, it just is. Yep. It's Space Game of Thrones. They would have absolutely given it to him. Now, again, had he failed, they absolutely wouldn't have committed to it. And they would have then done, but old boy would have absolutely given them fucking money, and they would have done that because they don't know how to say no to a good sales pitch up front. They do not say no.
And he wouldn't have failed.
And he wouldn't have failed. And that's the thing. Unlike Zack Snyder, he's actually a good filmmaker. It would have worked. So it is what it is.
And if they could have rolled this out as the big, huge presentation of all the things coming, Dune Saga, Dune this, Dune that, that's the setup. House Atreides, Sisters of Dune, Warriors of Dune, Hunters of Dune. Are you serious?
They would have done it. They would have let him cook.
And then Dennis would have probably thought more strategically about how he chopped up the movies, and we'd have gotten more of one in part one and part two all together, or he'd use the runtime to give us some of those scenes that he kept turning away from, and we'd have got those moments because he'd have known we were there, and he didn't have to sacrifice anything. He didn't have to trim down. He didn't have to do none of that.
Last thing before we do the you know what it reminds me of? He's making these films like people who have a really good idea for a TV show, but it's coming to ABC or Fox used to make it. It's like, you have a really good idea, but I don't know if I'm going to get a season two, so I'm going to rush through it and then hope that I can. And that is it's not even a knocking against him on this one. It's unfortunate that this is what happened. I honestly felt like if he wasn't making the films this way and actually thought it out, and if he did the Christopher Nolan method, which is I'm gonna tell my fucking story. You're gonna get what you get. Here's how much it's gonna be. Like he needs to walk into that office with Christopher Nolan big dick energy and saying, here's the blank check. Here's where you sign your name at. Make sure your assistant send it to my assistant in a week, all right? And then walk out. Yeah. He should have just done it
You're
that way.
You're not getting dailies. I don't want your notes.
Yep. It's not gonna get screened for the execs. This is what you're gonna do. If he had done that with like what Christopher Nolan does, I think we would have been this would have, again, it's still good. It would have been great. What would you all give it out of 10?
I'm at a 7.5, 8. B.
For me, I wanted to mention one other thing I'm not fooled by. Pulling the camera back when you have people who actually can do fighting and those moves in the sand and then zooming it in on Timothée is annoying. It's super annoying. Like, if my man can't do the moves, like, just don't have him fight. Bring his stunt double in and just hide his face or something. I hate that. I hate that they got these people who just, I don't know if they don't commit or they see him do it 100 times. They're like, you know what? 101 really ain't going to make a difference. He's really bad. I don't know what it is, but y'all need to find a better way to do this because y'all have a big epic fight scene at the end and that damn camera goes in like it's trying to pick his pockets. And I hate that shit. I really do.
You know the thing that makes me mad?
It don't make no damn sense.
This is going to blow your mind. I found this out. Apparently, remember the Raid 2? And remember old girl who, a hammer girl? Apparently she didn't know how. Apparently she didn't know how. She didn't know martial arts, but then trained. And I'm like, so why can't you? Like,
bro, you watch Into the Badlands, those actors, the American actors, went to training camps over the summer for Into the Badlands to learn how to do that stuff.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm with you. That annoys the shit out of me too. Because I'm just like, at this point, there's no excuse. And here's the thing. If Keanu Reeves, who's getting up there in age, can be doing some of them, hey buddy,
I'm not gonna put him. I'm not even gonna do that. Keanu has been training his whole damn life.
I'm just saying. If his
comparison is if Charlize Theron can take her happy ass
that too
again
to a training camp and go from zero skills to 100% believable in that hallway fight in her first really big.
Just saying.
Hold on. For just to be more relatable for the people who are like, oh, I don't know if I've seen those actors do that stuff. You have, Marvel, Chris Evans can really do barrel rolls and shit. Like, motherfuckers committed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
they commit.
Yeah.
So if you give me a big enough paycheck, it should be expected that you will learn how to do these moves.
Hey, you know what?
Like, I'm watching the kids from Avatar interviews now, and they can do stuff.
I even go with the idea.
When your director's first directive is show up knowing how to speak Fremen, not how to handle your fight scene. Priorities.
I will give Zack Snyder one thing. His actors at least showed it in the movie. They all hit the weight. Even fucking Commissioner Gordon was hitting them weights. I'm just saying, yo, hit the weight room, Timothée. Hit the weight room, dude. Hit a weight room. Eat a pork chop. Something.
Right. This Robert Pattinson. I don't need to get in shape to don the suit mask.
Okay,
getting
well,
on my nerves. I really
Robert Pattinson. He went to camp.
Did he?
Before Batman,
it didn't look like it in that did film. Because
do
it,
you
it
not remember? I don't think. First of all, it's not his fault that he was going from gaunt to healthy body weight.
No. I'm sorry. When I say go to camp, I'm also mean that you can also find.
Oh, you mean develop
camp.
The appropriate skill.
No, I mean actually go to camp.
White boys.
Yeah.
Y'all want too much from the white boys.
Well, I don't know because some of my boys be doing
far
be
afield.
Going to camp.
I'm just saying.
I know Brandon's gonna say what he is. Also, I'm gonna say when you rush your film so much that the final battle scene actually doesn't feel as epic as it should be. So there's that too.
It's not epic because it's setting up for part 3, which is maybe epic to come.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Brandon, what did you give it out of?
I told you, this is like a 7.5 and an 8 for me because he does take the high fantasy and sci-fi elements and do a really great brash depiction of the Chosen One mythos. And clearly y'all know that I am here for the Bene Gesserits as the architects of one of the greatest PSYOP campaigns ever done in Epic Fantasy. And he truly is a fan of their work. And for that alone, he has built an immersive experience around that that is a testament to the skill that's behind the camera. So he gets a 7.5 and an 8 for me. But all the stuff that y'all keep saying, especially Brandon, you are right. I forgot how much the camera shots in the final scene annoyed me. I can't go higher than that. But you didn't tell us your number before you went off, sir.
No, I just needed to go off before I told you my number. I do give this an 8 throughout space and time. White people's just be lying. The movie out of 10. So.
And Ro, you were a 7.5 or an 8?
I'm a 7.5.
All right. I had to look it up. Bro, me and you did talk about the first one. So I'm going to give this a 7.5 because I gave the first one a 7. I can't believe it was that
high.
What did
I give the first one?
You gave it a 6.5. So this
okay, yeah. So this is 7.5. Yeah.
Actually,
yeah,
no. You might have given high. Me. You gave it a 6.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yes, you did.
So this is a 7.5.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7.5. So
I'm not lowering the bar. Like, I'm sorry, you can't give me a movie like Arrival. You can't give me a movie like Prisoners. You can't give me a movie like Sicario and let me know that you know how to do all these elements individually and then come with the movie where you're supposed to basically put on a masterclass of all the shit you know how to do and not do it and expect you getting higher than that from me. No,
I mean, it's an improvement, and I think that's what it is. And it's like, and again, the entertainment factor is there.
Yes.
It's not a bad film. It's just another one of those things of, this comes back into, and I'll say it, we do this very frequently because reviewing is subjective. There are some times when we review a film lower than maybe other people do because we expect more from the person that's there. It's that thing of, I'm sorry, it's not fair. Life isn't fair. Like, if I expect more, if I know you can do better, and you have some time and you have the power to do it and you don't do it, I'm going to be more disappointed than if I see somebody who punches above their weight and gives me something that might not be as great, but, you know, they're doing the best. They're out directing or outperforming what my expectations were. This does not outperform my expectations of Dennis. I know he can do better. I know the material is there. I know that this has an ability to be such in, again, this could have been turning Dune into the next Star Wars. It could have been turning Dune into, you know, Game of Thrones in space. It's all those things. It's all there. It can still be that. It can. He just got to do it. And at this point, I'm like, come on, dude. Come on. You talk all this shit. You do all this stuff about this. I saw all that talk about how, you know, all this stuff he was talking when he was doing Blade Runner 2049 and all this thing. Like, all right, cool, show it to me. You now have something that has a rich material, and again, I still can't remember the fact, I'm going to keep saying it, when you make a Dune film and I don't got no bars in it, dude, I can't go higher than a 7.5. Come on, what am I doing? That's disrespectful to you. As a filmmaker, me letting you off that hook is disrespectful to you because you know you should have done fucking better. Come on.
Didn't do better than the Fear is the Mind Killer. I'm still quoting the original Space Opera movie.
How do you not even have that in? Come on, bruh. How do you not even have that in the film? How do you? He's about to. There's a moment in this film where that would have been a great time for him to do that, and they don't even fucking do it. I'm like, are you fucking serious right now?
Rebecca does it.
Right? And I'm like, are you fucking serious right now? Are we not gonna? Come on, man. So it's just like, I can't, man. I can't. I want to. I want to so bad. This is, you know, this is in my bag. I don't do anime, but I will do Dune. I will do this. I'm not a Dune fanatic, but this is the kind of space opera shit. Sign me up. Come on, guys. I did all the season of The Expanse. That was a slow burn. I fucking love The Expanse. You guys know this. Me and Ro talked about it all the time. I will do me a space opera. Come on, bruh. You have it. You have the ability.
I got a question. Is Christopher Walken still acting, or is he just like?
I think Christopher. No, it's like that Super Bowl commercial. I think it's
green.
I think it literally is a Super Bowl commercial. Christopher Walken's just doing Christopher Walken.
What?
Like, and you film it?
Yeah, you show you up just, here on my ship.
Yeah.
He didn't even try. He didn't even try.
But did he need to? Let's right. be real.
It's like, yeah. It's like,
right. And I'm actually like, I want that for me when I should have retired, but I'm still in the game. Because Christopher Walken is like, he gets up,
you showed up on my ship. You was a prince, but now you're a sand monster boy.
Yeah, no, he just came to work. He just came to work. That's all he did.
He is the most grounded thing in the movie because he's just doing Christopher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
He just came to work. I hope his check cleared. I hope it was robust.
Opera.
I'm not gonna lie, yo. Chris. I fucked with it. I was like, you know what? That track.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna lie. I had no problems with it.
Most realistic and believable character in the whole fucking movie. I was like,
your daddy
get it.
Was a punk.
Yeah, this is like, yeah, right, exactly. He was too.
I like the fact that he basically told Paul, "Your daddy's bitch made."
Right, and I, right, and then the look he gave after he said it, I was just like, you know what, that tracks.
Yeah,
you know, like, is that thing of old emperor type bullshit? And I'm like, that makes sense. That, you know what, that tracks. I'm okay with it. So All right, folks, you can find the rest of the reviews on mgrnumber.net or search for movie trailer reviews on iTunes or Spotify. We'll be back with some more reviews. Till next time, we are out of here. Peace.